All right. Hello, nerds. We are... Okay. For a second, I thought the music was not coming through. Hello, Christopher Ortiz. Thank you for joining, bud, even though this was kind of... I mean, I know I mentioned we might be doing this, but I was still uncertain up until about a half an hour ago. So, thank you for joining at last moment. And everyone who is listening in post, thank you as well. I do actually have dates in front of me this time, so pardon me while I read, but next week there will not be... I need to actually pull up the other calendar as well. There we go. Okay, so next week there will not be a live show Friday night. And then... we should be... Actually, no. Oh, you just got out of work. Nice. Good call. I am dealing with a new day job schedule, which is going to potentially put a damper on things for a couple of weeks for a live show. So we might have to find a new day for live shows in the meantime. But next week for sure, the week following for sure, there will not be a live show. So I do have a couple of things in the bag that will go live on the channel in the place of the live show. And then hopefully by then I will have the day job schedule sorted out and we will be able to deal with that. I think that is everything. Sorry, I'm distracted by my studio mode. Let's get into the news. We're going to try something new with the news for this show. This is also only going to be a news show. We're not going to be doing the normal second half. We're not going to be doing a gaming portion. We're just going to hit the news and call it a night. But everything's good to go. Okay, let's... get it going. So we're going to try something new. Well, try something different, I guess. Not exactly new. I'm going to try something different for this live stream. We are going to watch the Penguin trailer and see how quickly it takes us to get some sort of warning from YouTube. But it's only a minute and a half long, so hopefully it won't happen too quickly. But I haven't watched the Penguin trailer yet, so we're going to live react. Have you yet watched it, Chris? Let me know. Or anybody else, because it looks like there's actually a couple people in chat. So, yeah, if you've watched it, let me know what you think in chat. But let's take a look at this.
This.
Need to pause the
tunes. This is one of those moments.
Now in production. Oh, okay.
You gotta ask yourself, what kind of life do I want?
Max Original. Notice they've dropped the HBO. Yeah. Notice they've dropped the HBO. The official like change marketing change for HBO Max happens very, very soon.
It's ours.
So you'll be seeing it just referred to as Max.
Uncle's right hand. Try to push me out. You ain't seen what I can do.
Interesting. Like, this looks like just an extension.
I got you like a goddamn fish.
Although, I do see a little bit more Colin Farrell in this makeup. Like, somehow the makeup looks less... oh, I don't know. Right there, it looks pretty amazing again still, but yeah.
No kingpin, I got them.
Gotta say, that looks pretty great. Not gonna lie, looks pretty great. Yeah, it really does. Like, looks legitimately good. I'm impressed. There is a couple of bits in here where the makeup is less, like this specifically here. Obviously, it's not shot with the cinema camera. And then there was one earlier, too. I think it was right here? No, where was it? Right here?
The world ain't built for guys like us.
Yeah, that right there. That looks less impressive right there. You can totally see Colin in that. But then you get back down here and you lose him again. So, like, maybe, I don't know. I don't know if it's the body motions or something like that, but it definitely seems like it's a different fat suit this time. Still looks like I'm totally being nitpicky. This is just very minor gripes by comparison. That looks pretty great, not gonna lie. So yeah, new Penguin trailer. That's pretty awesome. Let's get to, what was the other piece of news that we were supposed to be... Oh yeah, so we're gonna touch on this for sure, but the other one that was in the headline, I want to make sure I touch on it, and that is Deadpool. So, Deadpool 3, Morena Baccarin and Stefan Kapicic both are returning. I did not look to see if this is a rumor or if this is legitimate. So, Marvel and Ryan Reynolds bring back both Marina Baccarin and Stefan Kapicic for Deadpool 3 as their respective characters, Vanessa and Colossus. Marina Baccarin was featured in both Deadpool movies as Vanessa, love of Ryan Reynolds, Wade Wilson. Her Instagram, I said yes. That's hilarious. Stefan Kapicic returns X-Men's Colossus and also confirmed on Instagram, it's official, here we come. So, yeah, not a rumor. That is legitimate. And also confirmed Brianna Hildebrand be returning as Negasonic Teenage Warhead. Oh, but that says unclear. Very interesting. November 8th, 2024. That's awesome. She, in the comic books, somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the Vanessa character becomes a mutant or has mutant abilities or something in the comic books, doesn't she? Season 4 wraps on primary principal photography for The Boys. That's pretty awesome. So we are just a couple months out, presumably, from... because we still don't have a release date, do we? It's coming soon-ish. Yeah, a few months, I would say. No date yet for The Boys. Yeah, still no date. But they have wrapped on principle, so we should probably get it by the end of the year. Season 2, House of the Dragon, now filming. I believe we mentioned... Oh, no, we didn't. We have official word now, though, that Season 2 of House of the Dragon is filming, so they have begun principal photography. And I don't believe there's a release date on this one just yet either, though we do know it's going to be sometime next year, especially if they're just now starting it. It could be very late into next year. Another Game of Thrones prequel in development with a Knight of Seven Kingdoms, the Hedge Knight. Huh, okay. Interesting. Other real quick box office tracking for Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is going to be a massive flop. I don't care about that. Flash trailer zooms in April 25th. There we go. Now we're to the Mandalorian bit. So we've been keeping tabs on this because for some reason the ratings have been going down, though they did kind of plateau between episode 5 and episode 6. Episode 7 was this week and I still haven't watched it, but I will watch it before we film next week. And we are at 1.15 billion minutes viewed. So we've crossed back over the billion. We're no longer in the hundreds of thousands. So that's good. We've tried to make these graphics bigger before, haven't we? It's second to Shadow and Bone and You. Really? You is number one? Ooh. I guess I haven't watched it since season 1, and even then I only saw like 2 or 3 episodes. but was not a fan. So yeah, that's impressive. We dropped from, I think it was 860,000, somewhere in that neighborhood, minutes viewed to 115 billion minutes viewed. So that's pretty good. I hear good things about episode 7. Again, I have not yet watched it, but if you have, Chris, or anyone else in chat, again, blow up the chat, man. Super Mario box office passes 500 million, crushes DC and Marvel combined, actually. Fans are showing up for Super Mario as the flick is now past the $500 million mark at the box office. Super Mario Brothers movie only released last week and now has made $508.7 million worldwide, with its domestic gross $260.3 million, giving Mario, Luigi, Toad, and Princess the best movie of the year. Flick also scored the best opening ever for an animated movie and is now number two animated movie released since 2019. Super Mario beat out Demon Slayer, Mugen Train, and is currently trailing Minions Rise of Gru's 942. So if this passes a billion, it will be the highest grossing animated movie ever. So that's awesome. And also, the other one, the Minions Rise of Gru, was also the same production company, Illumination Studios. So that's pretty impressive. Superman and Lois Season 3 brings back... Alright, so apparently I need to watch Superman and Lois, because I still don't think I've heard anything necessarily that bad about it. Like, there's some minor, like, Gamergate-type gripes about it, but nothing significant, like, nothing that's going to be make or break, I think. And then Star Trek Picard Season 3. I've heard this... Actually, I've heard mixed things about Season 3. I am a season and a half behind now. You don't have to watch the first two seasons. If you haven't, don't bother, as you can jump right into Star Trek Picard Season 3 and not miss a beat. Ooh, that's really interesting. They're also supposedly going to be setting up a new series, potentially without Jean-Luc, so very interesting to see, interested to see how Season 3 ends, because yeah, here we go, we even have like promos. That's pretty awesome. Alright, switching gears to a different source, we're going over to Bounding. Anne Frank graphic novel adaptation. Oh, don't care. Don't care. Don't care. Don't care. Oh, this is just not a whole lot of great headlines for the news for the live show today, I guess. Rocksteady delays Suicide Squad. Yeah, we briefly touched on that from the other source. Nicolas Cage reveals what DC character he would be fun to play. I mean, he was supposed to be Superman, right? So... Do-do-do... Queen Cleopatra, Dr. Sirius. Wait. What? This might be an inaccurate Gamergate complaint. It's no longer content with overriding source material of various comic book games and novels. Netflix has now turned... Huh? Russo's pausing the movie. Netflix has now turned its identity politics attentions towards real-world history, as the streaming service has announced their upcoming docuseries Queen Cleopatra will not only race-swap the eponymous ruler, but also argue that her having black skin is historically accurate. Is it not? Starring Adele James as the Queen of the Nile herself, the four-episode-long second entry in executive producer Jada Pinkett Smith's Netflix documentary series, African Queen, the first of which focused on Queen Zagina's reign over the area known as Angola, will focus on Queen Cleopatra, the world's most famous, powerful, and misunderstood woman, a daring queen whose beauty and romances came to overshadow her real asset, her intellect. Cleopatra's heritage has been the subject of much academic debate, which has often been ignored by Hollywood, continues the streamer's official synopsis. Now our series reassesses this fascinating part of her history. Where are we getting into how she wasn't black? I mean, Egypt is an African country, so she's got dark skin, I'm just saying. Blah, 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 blah. Don't care, don't care, don't care. It seems this reassessment, rewrite of history will be based less on objective factual historical records and more on the personal intuitions and feelings of its supposed subject matter experts. It's possible that she was an Egyptian. Oh, that's right, because she potentially wasn't Egyptian, even though she was the Queen of Egypt. Fair, that's right. I did forget that part of my history. One woman summarizing the crux of the documentary's argument. She is then followed by a man from the North African region. As his identity is not specified in the docuseries promotional material, it's currently unknown exactly which country he hails from. Who professes to imagine her to have curly hair like me and similar skin color. Finally, the trailer rounds out its teasing of its guests and declaration from an older black woman that I remember my grandmother saying to me, I don't care what they tell you in school, Cleopatra was black. Again, that's an opinion. Notably, all the quotes highlighted by Netflix in the service of prompting the idea that Cleopatra was black do not point to any specific archaeological evidence, but are all rather based in appealing to the emotions of those obsessed with misguided concept of representation. Again, according to Bounding Into Comics, there is no... Okay, here we go. Let's get into the history of it, shall we? I am always impressed that Bounding does the work. So this is likely because in reality all such evidence points to the ruler of the Ptolemaic Kingdom of Egypt having been not Egyptian or even African, but rather Macedonian Greek. Further, not only does Cleopatra directly descend from the very founder of the dynasty, the Macedonian Greek Ptolemy first Soter, but she also spoke Koine Greek as her native language. Ow! I feel like I knew that at some point in my history, but that... Yeah, okay. And while very few accurate depictions of Cleopatra have survived the test of time, a posthumous portrait of the queen found in the ruins of the ancient Roman city Herculaneum, blah, all of these words, depict her with fair skin and red hair. Over the brow of a large tuft of hair is painted rather like the notice found on portraits of women in the later 1st century BC and perhaps originally in the marble portraits of Cleopatra from Berlin and the Vatican. Susan Walker and Peter Higgs argued in favor of the portrait's accuracy in their book Cleopatra of Egypt, From History to Myth. The large eye, a late Ptolemaic feature, long nose, and full lips are also comparable to the features of Cleopatra as seen on her marble portraits and some of her coins. They asserted the effects of somewhat more idealized effect is somewhat more idealized than, for instance, the Antioch coin portraits, but there are similarities. Interesting. Okay. So they have one expert, and, I mean, this isn't definitive. I feel like that is a proper thing to point out. This is not the definitive. Yes, she was descended from the Ptolemaic dynasty. She was Macedonian Greek. Blah blah blah. It seems to have a little bit more factual basis, but again, is not 100% accurate. Because I have definitely, and I'm just shooting from the hip here because I don't have the documentation to back it up, but I definitely remember anyway, reading different accounts of that. So, do your homework, children. Figure it out for yourself. Come to your own conclusions. Don't just listen to the media. Not even me. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, returns to theaters to celebrate the 20th anniversary. Of course it does. Emily Swallow appears to explain why The Mandalorian constantly contradicts itself and why certain scenes feel completely out of place. How does it constantly contradict itself? I don't think that's accurate. So in a new interview discussing film, Swallow detailed that the show shoots many of its episodes at the same time and even have two crews going at the same time shooting different scenes. She explained, "We're usually shooting more than one episode at a time because we have two crews going at the same time." So let's just reiterate what we said in the previous paragraph, shall we? "So we'll jump back and forth between episodes while filming and the whole season in between different directors. Everyone has to keep track of where they are with their character and where they are in the story," Swallow elaborated. "The directors have to also keep track of where they're fitting into the overall arc of the season." She concluded, "I feel like all of the directors are very generous in terms of wanting to serve the overall story. No one is trying to commandeer their particular episode or put a stamp on it in any way that takes away from the rest of the show." So I'll also discuss Jon Favreau's role in the day-to-day as well as how he manages the various directors. She detailed, "I think John doesn't shy away from choosing directors who have unique styles, but there is so much concerted effort to make sure that everyone is on the same page in terms of the story that we're telling, the creative tone of the show. Makes himself so available just to make sure the heart of the story is consistent and it doesn't get too crazy because we don't shoot episodes one at a time. A lot of it depends on what set we have up and when because the sets are so expensive. So we'll shoot a few days of episode 3, then a few days of episode 6, then a few days of episode 2. This appears to explain why Bo-Katan Kryze appears to have just arrived on Mandalore for the first time in the most recent episode and seems to be unaware of the location of major landmarks such as..." I haven't watched the most recent episode, so that would make sense why there's no contradictions immediately jumping out at me. "Landmarks such as the Great Forge, despite previously arriving a Mandalore in the show's second episode, knowing exactly where other landmarks such as Capital City and the Living Waters are located. Not only does it explain Bo-Katan's behavior, it also explains why certain subplots, such as locating a memory chip for IG-11, are completely abandoned and replaced." Yeah, that makes sense. "Furthermore, it explains why Moff Gideon has no clue that Bo-Katan and Din Djarin have teamed up, despite his TIE interceptors and TIE bombers fighting both of them in Kalevala in the third episode of the season. He also seemingly doesn't know they've landed on Mandalore and have previously explored parts of the planet, despite having an Imperial base on the planet that would most likely have some way of tracking ships entering the planet's atmosphere." That also makes sense, but that's from the most recent episode, which I still haven't seen. So, yeah, sure. I feel like it's still a little sloppy. Like, this is kind of making excuses for them, but it is what it is. Because, I mean, all of your scripts should be done ahead of time, so all of that information should be taken care of in the script. So any of those inconsistencies should be worked out in the scripting phase, not in the editing phase, or the shooting phase, even. New Star Wars movie focused on Rey to be directed by documentarian Charmin Obaid-Chinoy. "Favreau makes it abundantly clear all Disney Star Wars projects are connected. You want to make sure there's a consistency across all of them." Yeah, that's been shot to hell by this point, hasn't it? Season 3, Episode 7, they gave it a 4, huh? I haven't really agreed with a lot of their takes on Mandalorian, so I don't necessarily take that as a bad sign. More rumor. Nope. Star Steven Yeun to portray race swap version of the Sentry in Marvel's Thunderbolts. I feel like welcome to the last 3 weeks. We've been talking about this for about a month now, I think. Despite storytelling flaws, Mandalorian shares pro-gun message. Sure. Thunderbolts undergoing rewrite. Original script reportedly put too much focus on returning Black Widow characters instead of the entire team. Of course it did. New Game of Thrones. Here we go. New Game of Thrones prequel series, Night of Seven Kingdoms. Let's get in a little bit deeper into this. Greenland New Game of Thrones prequel series, Night of Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight, during the company's announcement of its new Max streaming service. Where does it come from? In a press release, Warner Brothers Discovery revealed the show's logline reads, a century before the events of Game of Thrones, two unlikely heroes wandered Westeros. A young, naive, but courageous knight, Sir Duncan the Tall, and a diminutive squire, Egg. And his diminutive squire. He continues, set in an age when Targaryen line still holds the Iron Throne, the memory of the last dragon has not yet passed from living memory. Great destinies, powerful foes, and dangerous exploits all await these improbable and incomparable friends. That sounds actually pretty cool, not gonna lie. Series will be written and executive produced by George R. R. Martin. He is a busy, busy man. And Ira Parker, Ryan Condal, and Vince Gerardis are the EPs. Martin previously penned a number of short stories featuring Sir Duncan the Tall, who was originally the squire of a hedge knight named Sir Arlen the Penny Tree, of Penny Tree, and a young boy going by the name of Egg, who's really Aegon the Fifth. Wow. First short story, simply titled The Hedge Knight, was originally published in the Legends anthology book, eventually adapted into a graphic novel by Mike S. Miller. Martin would publish two other novellas following the adventures of Dunk and Egg, with The Sword and the Mystery Knight. All three novellas have been collected in A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. That's cool. I dig that. I can totally get behind that. I hate that you have to reload. All right, there we go. Hides poor storytelling with bombastic action sequence and cheesy Grogu scenes. Oh, come on. New rumor claims to reveal the ending of upcoming Ahsoka series. Yeah, let's see where the rumor comes from at least, and then we'll... Uh-oh. There's a rat in your wall. That's no good. Or it's your hamster from 5 years ago. I mean, theoretically, either are possible. I don't know how long a hamster's lifespan is, but... All right, so... Potential spoilers for the Ahsoka series, but a new rumor claims to reveal the upcoming Ahsoka series starring Rosario Dawson... how it will conclude. The newer rumor comes from Making Star Wars. So this is right from Jump Street, about a 50-50 chance to be true, because these guys have definitely broken some legit scoops and have definitely had very bad leads. We'll be generous. It was a track record of successful Star Wars scoops, including a previous scoop that claimed Grogu would ride around in IG-11 in Season 3 of The Mandalorian. Scoop that was most recently confirmed in Episode 7 of Mandalorian Season 3. According to Making Star Wars, the season is split in half. The first four episodes focus on the New Republic, while the final four episodes are focused on Ahsoka and Sabine trying to locate Grand Admiral Thrawn and Ezra Bridger. Which, I'm pretty sure they showed us Ezra in the trailer. So, that there's a little bit to that, I think. And obviously, we're getting Grand Admiral Thrawn. He's also in the trailer, but that's not a... I think that's a legit I know, because who else is blue and looks like that? From there, the Alec claims Ahsoka and Sabine are not only trying to locate Grand Admiral Thrawn and Ezra Bridger, but they also attempt to prevent Thrawn from returning to the main Star Wars galaxy. To this end, Ahsoka and Sabine fail. Making Star Wars asserts Thrawn does return at what I believe is the climax of the eighth and final episode of the season. Not only does Thrawn return, but he comes with a host of allies ready to do battle against the New Republic. Thrawn exits his ship gantry back from the unknown region with his forces all laid out before him like a badass. Thrawn takes in the moment, looks at his allies, including the powerful Night Sisters, fallen Jedi, stormtroopers, held together by magic, and his gold-faced bodyguard named Enoch. Then apparently reveals in the moment and promises a reckoning is coming, which would set up a second season. So, again, there might be something there, but I still wouldn't give this a whole heck of a lot of salt. Grand Admiral Thrawn was previously hinted at Mandalorian Season 2 when Ahsoka confronts... I mean, he's not hinted. He's in the trailer. We know he's going to be the big bad. Yeah, right there. That's him. To be played by Mads Mikkelsen's brother, Lars Mikkelsen, previously voiced the character in Star Wars Rebels. Oh, I didn't realize that. I hadn't read deeply into that at this point. Not only is Thrawn confirmed to be part of the Ahsoka series, but his presence was also referenced in the most recent episode of The Mandalorian, which, again, we have not watched, so I don't know how they do that. During one of the opening scenes, Moff Gideon takes part in a Shadow Council composed of a number of Imperial warlords, including Galad Palaeon, who in the expanded universe became Grand Admiral Thrawn's right-hand man when he chose the Chimera as his flagship, the Star Destroyer that Palaeon previously commanded. In The Mandalorian, Palaeon informs the Shadow Council that they should delay confronting the New Republic until Thrawn returns. He says, "But that strength must not be wasted. Grand Admiral Thrawn's return will herald the reemergence of our military and provide Commandant Hux enough time to deliver Project Necromancer." So they're setting up the return of the Emperor with that, it sounds like. Grand Admiral Thrawn and his Imperial forces were previously defeated by the Lothal Rebels and primarily consisted of Hera Syndulla. I have not watched Rebels, so I'm not going to pronounce these names correctly. I apologize. Hera Syndulla, Kanan Jarrus, Chopper, Garazeb, Aurelios, Sabine Wren, and Ezra Bridger. During a bombardment of the capital city of Lothal, Bridger confronts Thrawn on the bridge of the Chimera and proceeds to take control of a group of Purgle that jump to hyperspace with Thrawn and the ship in tow. Despite the bridge being exposed to the nature of space, it's never revealed where the Purgle jumped to, but clearly Thrawn somehow survived. And then the official, which we've kind of covered. So that's pretty cool. I don't know, again, it sounds like they're kind of painting in broad strokes. So, is it going to end in a cliffhanger? Probably. Is it going to be that cliffhanger? Eh, maybe. Whatever. Seth Rogen says, TMNT, Mutant Mayhem attempts to honor everything about the franchise while also trying to infuse something new and exciting into it. Oof, I will definitely believe it when I see it, because that it is still very possibly going to be just a dumpster fire. Or it could be amazing. Like, I'm definitely not ruling either option out, but I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of middle ground there. Polygon pushes narrative that the Legend of Zelda series explores queer themes, claims Link is a gay icon. Oh, good lord. Riot Games, why it's taking so long to complete Arcane Season 2. Bo-Katan claiming the Darksaber. Mandalorian EP Rick Fumiyawa questions, who is the Mandalorian at this point? See, this is kind of leading into the rumor that we talked about in the main episode last week, where very possibly we are going to see the end of Din Djarin in the Mandalorian series, because we have plenty of other Mandalorians here. That's why they didn't name the show after Din. They just named it after the race of people. So you could change focus to somebody else down the road. And it seems they are setting up Bo-Katan as the new Mandalorian that's going to take over. Obi-Wan Kenobi, actress questions how anyone can believe escape scene from Fortress Inquisitors. Yeah. Doubles down on quirky MCU humor, reveals another blah. Mandalorian movie, maybe Disney's worst Star Wars mistake yet. That's debatable. That's clickbaity. I'm not going to buy into it. Lady Gaga wearing modified Harley Quinn. I showed that, I think, was the image that we used for the announcement that they have finished their principal photography. Blizzard Entertainment reveals openly, blah, don't care. It's a video game character, guys. Come on now. And then we are into ground we've already covered. So, let's go. Let's do some music, and then I think we're just going to call it, just because it's going to be a shorter one if it happens, and it happened, so we got to cut to the chase. Metal Injection, let's go. Let's go. Kevlara signs Nuclear Blast. Ooh. Re-records early Sepultura material. Oh my goodness, this is awesome. That's Max and Igor. Not his son, but his brother. Cavalera, the duo founding Sepultura, members Max and Igor Cavalera have signed to Nuclear Blast. The duo's first releases will be re-recordings of Sepultura's 1985 debut album, Bestial Devastation, and 86 follow Morbid Visions. Oh, that's awesome. As we get harder year after year, sometimes you gotta go back to where it all started, said Max. Yes, you do. We re-recorded Bestial Devastation and Morbid Visions with the amazing sound of now, but its raw and timeless spirit. The artwork reflects the times we're living in now, apocalyptic as hell. We also have two new tracks with riffs from those days, remembered by heart. That's really awesome. I always felt like recordings of early work didn't do justice to the way we perform songs. Not at all. Not even a little bit. If you go back and listen to early Sepultura, you can hear what they wanted it to be, but it definitely does not actually sound like that. So this is a very special moment in our lives. We're very proud to show you real fans our true representation of the amazing records Bestial Devastation and Morbid Visions with an insane visual identity. Enjoy and see you all in the pit. So tour dates starting August 29th in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and then they go everywhere. Ends in October in LA. No kidding. Oh, that looks great. That looks great. I can totally get behind that. Volbeat and Hellstorm go on tour together. Makes sense. Metallica. Oh, yeah. The new Metallica record came out today. So happy Metallica Day, everybody. Sabaton. Album review. Overkill. Blah. Not a big Overkill fan. Lars Ulrich names his favorite Metallica songs to play live. Sabbath streams remastered Mob Rules. Ooh. From Live Evil Deluxe Reissue. That's pretty awesome. Geddy Lee unveils title and release date of new autobiography. Speaking of Sepultura, their current vocalist, Derek Green, wants to record a ballad for the next record. I feel like Sepultura has not been Sepultura for a long time. Danny Filth talks Ed Sheeran, new Cradle of Filth, their live album, and 25 Years of Cruelty and the Beast. Voivod rework old material. This is seems to be a theme tonight. Older bands reworking older material, as seen here by the Cradle of Filth stuff. We talked briefly about Sepultura, Black Sabbath, and now Voivod. 10 best sequels in metal history. Avon Burroughs' Future with Testament. Oh, that's cool. I feel like more bands should include, like, Dragon Force does this a fair amount. Like, they have live streams of writing sessions. So, Fear Factory posts instrumental demo of new song. That's a cool idea. Like, I feel like there's a great way to get fans more into the music. It gets them a little bit more, it gives them some ownership of the music in a way, so that they're more likely to want to stick around and see where it ends up. Spirit Box announces new bassist. I feel like this has been a minute. Josh Gilbert from As I Lay Dying. Oh yeah. He was touring, that's what it was. Confirmed Gilbert is the permanent member of the band. Cool. That wasn't enough. Spirit Box also debuted a new song called The Void. Ooh, so maybe we're gonna have to try and find that for the next regular episode. Yeah, The Void right there. And then Hella Good cover. That's a hell of a no doubt song to cover. That's dumb. I don't like that at all. Vomitory announced his first album in 12 years. Veil of Maya. We've talked about Veil of Maya. I'm okay. I don't need to do that again. Thra. New single, Drag, will destroy you. Sleep Token announces U.S. tour. These dudes are huge right now. Which I kind of understand, and I kind of can get behind, even though I'm not the biggest Sleep Token fan. Like, they definitely have some legitimate heavy bits. So, like, anything that gets people into heavier music, I'm all about. So, September 8th in Alton, Virginia at the Blue Ridge Rock Festival, and then running through October 7th in Sacramento, California. Foo Fighters begin teasing something interesting. New single from Seven Dust. We'll definitely be talking about that in the next regular episode. Dream Theater, Devin Townsend, and Animals as leaders announced North American tour. June. June 16th, Cedar Park, Texas, runs through September 26th in Phoenix, Arizona. That's a hell of a lineup. I mean, for sure, these two. I can take it or leave it with Dream Theater, but Devin Townsend and Animals as leaders, yes, please, give me more. Melvins announced, more re-recordings of their 1986 debut 7-inch. Look at Buzz. Oh, Buzz, you and your crazy afro. That's awesome, though. So, Melvins originally released their debut 7-inch in 1986. Now, nearly 40 years later, Melvins have re-recorded all six songs from the 7-inch for a brand new EP called The Devil You Knew, The Devil You Know. Check out the modern version of the grinding process below. Nice. Which sounds chunky as ever. Of course, because it's the Melvins, and it's amazing. We're not going to do that. We're not going to listen to that in stream. We already kind of tempted fate enough. New Metalocalypse movie. Oh, here we go. This is definitely something we've been keeping tabs on. It's been a decade since Doomstar Requiem. Oh, wow. Really? A decade since Doomstar Requiem came out? That's a little nuts. Metalocalypse and Deathclock are finally back in a huge way. New Metalocalypse movie named Metalocalypse Army of the Doomstar will arrive later this year, so we still don't have a release date for it. But a new full-length soundtrack and brand new Deathclock album. Oh, yes! Death Album 4. Tommy Blocka, Victor Brandt, Steven Brunner, King Diamond, of course, Mark Hamill, Kirk Hammett, John Hamm, Scott Ian, Amy Lee, Malcolm McDowell, Juliet Mills, Lorraine Newman, I don't know who that is, Rhea Yarborough, don't know who that is either, Levia Zeta, nope, Synopsis of Army of the Doomstar is the all-new animated movie begins after the heroic rescue of Toki Wartooth. Deathclock frontman Nathan Explosion finds himself traumatized in a brutal professional and romantic flat spin, all while he is tasked with fulfilling the prophecy and confronting the ultimate songwriting challenge to save the planet. Can Nathan Explosion look beyond his brutally damaged ego to save his band, stop the Metalocalypse, and finally face the ultimate evil, Salacia? So a movie, a boatload of new Deathclock music, and on top of that, North American tour with Baby Metal. Meh. I'm sorry. I can't dig the Baby Metal. It's just not a thing. Tour is as follows. Beginning, what is that, August 30th in Houston, Texas. They have a crap ton of dates all the way through October 11th in Los Angeles. So, where are they going? New York Hammerstein Ballroom, Mr. Christopher Ortiz. That's the one near you, sir. I can totally get behind two new records of Deathclock music. Absolutely. That's going to be amazing. And finally, we have some idea of when the movie's going to come out. So, also pretty awesome. Oh, Kveller Talk. I totally skipped past this. Oh, no, I didn't, because we're... There we go. New album. Stream nude single, which I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but these dudes rock. So we'll probably be talking about that in the next regular episode as well. Deathgrave, Autopsy, etc. Stream Violent new album. It's Only Midnight. Kirk Hammett explains why he likes his Lux Eterna solo. I feel like that's not a great solo there, Kirk. New Devil Driver single, If Blood Is Life. We'll be talking about that in the next regular episode. Yeah, that is the episode, it looks like there, nerds. So, we are going to be calling it... there's a little bit of background noise, I do apologize. But, yeah, we're going to be calling this the episode. So, thank you very much to everybody who joined. If you want to join yourself, we try and do these every Friday night. Though, again, at the very least, the next 2 weeks, we will not be able to do Friday nights. So, we will not be doing a live show for 2 weeks, but we will be doing regular shows on Wednesdays, or as close to Wednesday as possible. Again, still working around a pretty new day job schedule. So, as that evolves, I will be keeping you posted. And as new things happen, again, keeping you posted. Stick here, though, if you want to talk about all of the nerdy and pop culture-y news and things. And go over to the Clips channel if you want to catch these in smaller bite-sized chunks, or you just want some other exclusive content. You can find some shorter bits over there. Generally speaking, this channel here is for the longer content. And yes, a big shout out to Mr. Christopher Ortiz out there in the comment section. Whoever just joined chat, I apologize. You've missed all of the fun. We are on our way out. But thank you very much, nerds, for joining, especially all of you who are listening or watching in post. I appreciate you just as much as the people who find us live. We will be heading out. Have a good evening, nerds. We will see you next time. Before we go, though, always, always remember that if it's generally nerdy, it's probably here.